This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I speak to Martha Barnett about her book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. You may recognize the name Martha Barnett from the public radio show and podcast, Away with Words. She's spent some two decades as the co-host of that show, a public radio fan favorite. Every week, she and her co-host Grant Barrett answer calls and questions about language, about word etymology, slang phrases, idioms. They also listen to what callers have to share about their families and personal lives and the features of language baked into experiences of all kinds. Now, Martha Barnett shares her own language story. Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land is something of a linguistic memoir. While it's still very much about language and the types of topics that keep us all glued to our radios, we also learn about Barnett's own story and the ways in which her love of language took root and grew. From her Appalachian roots, her educator parents, her private classes in ancient Greek with a beloved polyglot professor, to the path that led her inexorably behind the microphone, Barnett's own story is still very much a story about language and its endlessly fascinating features and topics. I spoke to Martha Barnett about her book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. So I used to teach English and creative writing, and I taught a class in language and society. My students had to keep a language log, and they would turn it in a few times a semester, right? First, they thought it was the bane of life until I said to them, you know, you can listen to Away with Words on KSTX 89.1 FM, and I will allow you to create one entry around one of the things that you learned from one of the episodes.
That's fantastic.
It was so much fun to see what they were selecting, what attracted them and what they got into and how they would write about it. I did that semester after semester after semester. It was really fun.
Oh, that warms my heart. I can't wait to tell Grant and our producer, Stephanie, because we always love hearing about, the show being used in classrooms. It just makes it all worthwhile.
Yep. Well, let's talk about this book. Would you say that your book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land, is a linguistic memoir? I was trying to figure out what category is this? What genre is this? What are we talking about here?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that question because it is hard to come up with a word for this. Maybe we need a new one. I guess linguistic memoir is pretty good because it's about language and the joy of language and the joy of learning about word origins and regional dialects and slang and all of that. But it's also got a fair amount of memoir in there, things I've never talked about on the show, and because I just felt like that was the way to get into some of this stuff. I felt like I could tell the stories of words, but it was time to tell my own story. And, you know, some of the things that I've learned co-hosting the show for more than 20 years now.
And it just works. I mean, I feel like, yes, it is so much fun to read about language, but mm-hmm. It is also, your story is so, well, it's very inspiring, but there's just something about your story that enhances how we are receiving all this information about language. I don't know if that makes sense. But it's just so much fun to read. And I wanted to ask you about Adventures in Language Land. Where is Language Land for you?
Oh, gosh, what a great question. I think Language Land is wherever I am and wherever you are, because it's all around us. And there's just so much to be curious about all the time. I mean, I run into people all the time who tell me they stopped mid-sentence because they used a word and they thought, where in the heck does that come from? Or used a phrase. And I was trying to figure out, as we were talking about, how do I mesh my love of language, my love of word origins, with the stories that I have to tell about my moving through the world, which I guess is language land. You know, some of the lessons that I've learned that I talk about in the book, about how the end of the story is never really the end of the story. I've had situations that I thought were failures at the time and turned out to be some of the best things that ever happened to me. So I guess now that nobody's ever asked me that question, but it's a good one. I guess language land is all around.
And you do such a fantastic job of allowing us to see right where you are and what you're experiencing in the past. And then as you're moving through your life and we go on road trips with you also, and it does feel like language land is wherever you're taking us, and you're talking about a lot of different things related to your life and related to language. You are a worder. What is a worder, and how did you become one? I think we have to read the book maybe to answer the last part of that question.
that's a story in and of itself. But I was just trying to think of, I mean, I know a lot of us love to describe ourselves as word nerds, and clearly I would say you're a word nerd as well, as listeners to Away with Words. But I was trying to think of another way to describe that, and I had started getting into bird watching a little bit, birding, as the real serious folks call it, birding. And I started thinking about how birders, people who are devoted to observing birds in the wild, and they do it without judgment. You know, they're just delighted every time they find a new species. And I started thinking about the similarities between birders and people who love words. And I started calling myself a worder because it's kind of the same thing. And do you know this term spark bird, for example?
No, tell me.
Well, among birders, the spark bird is that one bird that really sets you on the path. The bird that you observe and you just think, wow, that's really amazing. And I wonder what else is out there. I want to observe more birds. And then that sets you on your path. That's what birders call a spark bird. And I started thinking about, well, I wonder what people's spark words are. I think for me, it was sitting in Latin class in ninth grade and seeing the word C-R-A-S, cross, in Latin, which means tomorrow. And I had sort of this light bulb moment. Cross means tomorrow, C-R-A-S. Does that have anything to do with the word procrastinate? And yeah. So I went immediately to the dictionary, looked it up, and that was sort of a spark word for me. You know, that made me realize that words don't just spring fully formed out of the ground. Uh-huh. You know, that they have a history, and often they have a poetry hidden inside of them. And so I guess to bring that back around to birding, I think that, you know, many of us have a spark word, whether it's a word your grandmother used, or a dialect term that you come across when you're traveling around the country, or just some word that you found in your reading, and you just start to wonder and start to have that sense of curiosity that just that sets you on that path and keeps you going. So I think there are a lot of similarities between birders and worders.
What's your spark bird?
Oh, my spark bird?
Yeah.
You know, here in California, we got one of those bird buddy cameras where you, it's like a camera that's on a bird feeder. And there are birds called scaly-breasted munias, which I'd never heard of before.
Wow.
And I forget, it might be an indigenous name. I can't remember why they're called munias, but they just have these markings on their breast. And it was just something I'd never seen before. And then I got the Merlin Bird Identification app. Have you ever used
this? Yeah, I've heard about it. Oh my gosh.
It is the coolest thing. You must get it. Free. You can download it on your phone, and you can just go outside and press a button, and you hear all these different bird calls, and they identify them for you right there and give you all this information. It's put out by Cornell University, and it is a fantastic introduction into birding.
Oh, I used to follow the Cornell camera online.
Ah,
I would go
there. You go.
You log in, and so I love roadrunners and woodpeckers, a particular kind of woodpecker. Mm-hmm. And cardinals, of course, but I was talking the other day to Peter Orner, who's my co-host on a different podcast called The Lonely Voice. We were talking about a story where a character who is an anthropologist, and he's a very unusual guy, and he feels something very strongly when he goes to the zoo and sees an ape. But he's a little frustrated with his wife's parrot. Mm-hmm. And that the parrot can talk. And we were, you know, sort of overanalyzing what was going on there. I have a conure that talks. And I thought it's because the parrot can say words. And the wife would, in the story, would talk to this bird and not to the husband. And would talk to the bird about things where the husband was sort of excluded. But I thought there's this kind of soulfulness with a bird, granted, that is just parroting, that is just repeating. But there, I just love this connection between birds and words, obviously. So that's crazy. And I can only tell you that story. So only you would understand.
Oh, I think any word nerd would appreciate that. Any birder would, a worder would appreciate that.
Yes. Well, the influence from your parents is super important in your life as a worder. Can you talk a little bit about your parents?
I'm so glad you asked that question because I rarely get a chance to talk about my folks, and I adored them both, and they were both educators. My mother taught English for 25 years in the public schools in Louisville, Kentucky, and my father was an educator as well. He taught at the Southern Baptist Seminary there in Kentucky, and he was largely self-taught. He dropped out of high school. Or actually out of middle school, back before child labor laws, and went to work in a textile mill for years and years and years, and then had a life-changing conversion in his when he was 19 and went back to high school and discovered all the great writers, you know, Shakespeare and Walt Whitman and Rilke. And so our dinner time consisted of a lot of quotations from those great writers, and they both had such an appreciation for language, and they both honored curiosity in a way that was extremely nurturing.
That's so beautiful. I love reading about how your dad would have to add on rooms to the house.
We literally did. And the thing is, he would read those books. He was just, books were his way out of the grinding poverty in which he lived. They were his way out of the textile mill. And yes, he was continually buying books and reading them. And we added on a study to the house with lots of bookshelves. And then later we added another study downstairs, again, lined with lots of books, because he just had a voracious intellectual curiosity. And I'm just so, so grateful for that.
Oh, wow. And what about Professor Lutkowski?
Professor Lutkowski. Yes, he was also very, very influential for me. He was an immigrant from Latvia who was a polyglot. He was very comfortable in 12 languages, and he would noodle with Hungarian and Urdu over over the weekend. He would teach a different student every night after he retired. They would come to his home, and he would teach a different language every night. And he agreed to teach me ancient Greek because the truth is I was flunking out of my ancient Greek course in college. And so I dropped it and found Professor Lutkowski, who taught me language in a completely different way, because nearly half the languages in the world today stem from one common root, Proto-Indo-European, and they all branched out from that, which means that there are links between languages as diverse as Russian and Greek and Italian and Irish and ancient Hittite. And Professor Lutkowski had such a he had such a bird's eye view of language that he was able to teach me ancient Greek in an entirely different way, because he would say, well, this is this word in Greek and this word in Latin, and it's related to the Sanskrit word for the same thing, and it's similar in Latvian and Lithuanian. It was just this thrilling way to approach language and just to have these etymological romps over coffee and wonderful fresh bread that he baked. And so he was very, very influential for me.
I love that story, that chapter in your book. And it's so powerful, the effect that one person can have on another. You studied with him for years.
Yes.
And what he added to your life. And obviously this burgeoning love of language at the time that, of course, then it took root and it just grew from there. I just found that story so I have to admit, I was so emotional at the end of that story. His last words to you were in Spanish.
Yes, yes. I found that really interesting because at the time I didn't know very much Spanish. And I had gone to visit him in the hospital, and there were newspapers lying around in various languages. So I was sure it was his room in the hospital. And we had a really nice visit. And then as I was leaving at the door, he didn't say it in the language we always communicated in. But for some reason, he said to me in Spanish, "No me olvides," which, as you know, means "don't forget me." And I thought that was a little odd at the time, that he was reaching for a language that was at a remove from us both. But he died the next day, and I've never forgotten him. And everything I do now is an attempt to carry on, you know, and pay forward all the gifts that he gave me. I mean, you're right. Teachers change lives, and you know, you never know all the ripples that you're sending out, but I'm glad to be one of those ripples for Professor Lutkowski.
How beautiful. Is your favorite word still mellifluous?
Well, let's see. What day is today? I really do love mellifluous because it comes from Latin words. I mean, it means something soft and beautiful, like a mellifluous voice or something like that. And it comes from Latin words that literally mean flowing with honey. It's related to Spanish miel, which means honey. And I love that word in particular because it's a great example of what Ralph Waldo Emerson said about language being fossil poetry. You know, he said the etymologist finds the deadest word to have been once a brilliant picture. Language is fossil poetry, and I just love the little linguistic fossil that's preserved inside mellifluous. But ask me again on a different day, and I'll give you a different word.
Okay. I love learning so much about language. I mean, we get to tune in to the radio show or the podcast and learn so much from you and your co-host. But I love this book because there are new things. There are always new things, I think, but there are so many new things that I learned about word origins, like where blurb comes from. I just thought that was some made-up word. I didn't know the story. You know, a blurb. Yeah, that fits. You know? But and jacuzzi and boycott and all of these words. I mean, there's so much in this book that I think, you know, worders and word nerds will just fall into and fall in love with. But I was amazed. I didn't know this about your career in journalism, about your work telling the story about the artificial heart. That was so new to me. I just wonder about how you were trying to raise money to go to school, and you sort of fell into that world, but it's still a world of words. I mean, that was such a weighty topic at the time.
Yes.
And still is. I remember I was, as a younger person, you know, sort of hearing about Barney Clark and the Jarvik 7. I couldn't believe my ears, but it was sort of like to come across it and see how close you were to it. You know, the Martha Barnett of Away with Words was so close to it. It was really surprising to read about it, and it just absolutely remarkable to me.
Yeah, I had wanted to go to graduate school in ancient Greek, but I just didn't have the money, and so I went. So I went back to Louisville, and I started working at the Louisville Times, the newspaper there, at the time, and And eventually I ended up covering the medical beat, which was a good fit for me because I'd had so much Greek and Latin by then. And of course, that really helps when you're talking to doctors because so much of what they talk about in the medical world is derived from words in Greek and Latin, you know, like coronary. It comes from the Latin word corona, which means crown, because the coronary arteries form a little crown, a little wreath around the heart. And so it was always as if they were speaking poetry to me, which was good and bad because it was sometimes distracting because, you know, the language they were using was so beautiful. But yeah, I was just about to leave the newspaper to go off and study ancient Greek. And then this story fell in my lap that they started doing the artificial heart experiments in Louisville. And this was just this epic story. I mean, it was all over the media, you know, the cover of Life magazine, leading the newscasts every night. And it was this extraordinary story where this... I mean, there were kind of Greek mythology elements to it, you know, flying too close to the sun because as surgeons removed this man's heart and put in a plastic and metal device that kept him alive for 18 glorious days until the valves in the heart threw some clots into his brain. And he had a massive stroke and he lived another 602 days, but with a lot of complications yes, it was a very, very intense story that I felt that somebody needed to tell the family's story. Somebody needed to once the news media kind of had their fill and left, you know, when it was the story mainly then of a stroke patient who happened to be tethered to this 323-pound machine that was continuing to keep his heart going, there was still a whole story there to tell. And so I took time out for my studies. I figured the ancients would still be there when I got back. And so I ended up writing a book with his family about the ordeal that they went through.
That's just incredible. Well, I want to talk to you about familect and neologisms. Because as you write, dictionaries are a record of what's out there, not what should be, you know, something to fill in the gaps and to name things as we understand them. And I enjoyed reading about this acronym FUDGE. Mm. And I learned so much about this idea of the way that a word ends up in the dictionary. I mean, I've always sort of known, but not to this level of detail that's so interesting. So let's talk about fluffle.
Okay. Yeah, fluffle is an interesting made-up word, and you may have seen a meme circulating around the internet about how a fluffle is a collection of bunnies. You know, it's a collective noun, like a smack of jellyfish or a herd of antelope. But fluffle was made up and apparently stuck into Wikipedia as a joke. And a listener called our show and said, you know, I heard this word fluffle. It means a group of bunnies. And a friend of mine claims that she and her friends made it up. And we did some digging. And it turns out that is the case, that apparently this person eventually, after some students in Canada were joking about making up the word fluffle, they surreptitiously stuck it into Wikipedia, and it made the rounds before somebody realized, wait a minute, this there's no substantiation for this. So it's one of the few words that somebody has made up, and it's stuck around. I love it. I think it really indicates what you're looking at. If you're looking at a fluffle of bunnies, you know, what could be better than a fluffle of bunnies?
It's such a good word. But it got me to thinking about one time I was listening to Away With Words, and somebody called in, I'm not going to get it exactly right, but somebody called in and asked about something close to when it's raining and the sun is out, the devil mm-hmm. is beating up his wife.
Yes.
When I was a kid, we used to say this. My siblings and I would be playing outside in Laredo, Texas, very hot summers and the sun would be out and then suddenly there'd be like a little cloud burst and the sun would be out and it would be raining and we would just sort of scream out, the devil's beating up his wife. And nobody wondered where that came from. I don't remember my grandfather saying it or my parents saying it. It was just always sort of there. And I've asked my siblings and they don't really remember where we got it from. And I was so embarrassed to, as an adult, to say that to somebody. I would never say, it sounds so terrible, the devil is beating up his wife. So it was just like this little secret that I kept. And one day I'm listening to Away With Words and you all are talking about it. I almost fell out of my chair.
We're talking about your little secret.
My little secret was all out there for everybody. It was such an incredible moment. I turned the radio up loud. I told my students about it, and then everybody knew. But, yeah, I just love this about Away With Words. And I know that sort of despite your best efforts, you ended up, you know, as you say in the book, behind the mic, on the radio, you know.
Yeah.
And I want our listeners to find your book and read about your life and this career, this journey that you've been on that led you to Away With Words. And tell us about Richard Lederer, if you can, and also about Grant Barrett. But there's just so much about that show and podcast that is really for everyone. I mean, from something that's so resonant and familiar to something, you know, sort of kind of out there that I haven't necessarily wondered about or encountered, but that I find so interesting. There's just so much there. But I wonder if you can talk about how you got to Away With Words.
Well, the previous co-hosts of the show, which was originally produced at KPBS here in San Diego, were Richard Lederer, and a lot of people know his books like Anguished English and Crazy English, and he has a PhD in English, and he also has sort of a borscht belt comedian's sense of humor, and so he's a very, very entertaining person to listen to on the topic of language. And his co-host was Charles Harrington Elster, who wrote books like The Big Book of Beastly Mispronunciations, and he was very much a stickler for proper grammar. And at one point, Charlie left the show, and so they did a nationwide search looking for a replacement for Charlie, and they found me in Kentucky writing my own little books on word origins, and I also had the world's worst public speaking phobia event. It was,
I don't believe it. It was really, really bad. I do not believe it.
No, it's really true. But I just thought, gosh, if I could talk every week to thousands and thousands of fellow word nerds, fellow worders, about my passion for language, about the mundane magic that is the way we use words and communicate with each other. If I could do that, that would be amazing. And so I really had overcome a profound fear. I'm much more of a writer than a speaker, or I was then. And I just thought, well, you know, they say leap and the net will appear. And so I went out to San Diego for a tryout, and for some reason they hired me.
Wow, that is so fantastic. And so then tell us what happens next.
Well, Richard ended up leaving the show. And so then we had to do another search for a co-host. And we found this 36-year-old young lexicographer in New York City who had a very different style from mine. You know, he had been in New York for many, many years. And I'm kind of a slow-talking Southerner. And he's a very rapid-fire, just extremely smart, just voracious reader, Grant Barrett, who's very, very quick on his feet. And he joined the show. And then in 2007, this was right after I had been hired on to KPBS full time. It was the beginning of the recession, and KPBS ran out of money to produce the show and canceled our show and another local show. And Grant and I and our producer, our intrepid producer, Stephanie Levine, just thought, no, wait, this is too good. Our ratings have never been higher. The feedback we get from listeners of all stripes, you know, of all persuasions, politically right, politically left, old, young, everybody just gave us such wonderful feedback about what we were doing. And, you know, maybe we were naive. I mean, I know we were naive to some degree, but we just thought, no, we can't stop doing the show. We're going to figure out a way to put on this show. And so we made a lot of sacrifices for many years, started producing it ourselves, distributing ourselves, and now we're distributed all across the country on NPR affiliates. And it's been a labor of love. You know, it's been such a joy to be able to do this show. I still pinch myself every week when I sit down to the microphone, because it's just been an amazing ride. It's been a lot of work. Sometimes yeah. It felt like living on a submarine, but it's been a lot of work. But the responses we get from listeners just keep us going. And they're the people who support the show.
And it really transmits that everything you've just said, the hard work, the effort, the knowledge, the patience sometimes too with us word nerds, and also the joy. It really does. And I think that's why people keep listening and keep calling in and keep asking questions about language.
I'm so glad to hear that. I mean, it really does feel like that proverbial box of chocolates. You know, I say, hello, you have a way with words. And the things that people come up with are just amazing. I mean, it amazes me. I was writing the book last fall, and it dawned on me that I'd been doing the show for 20 years. It hadn't even really occurred to me. I hadn't really stepped back and thought about the fact that I've been doing this for 20 years, and we have not run out of things to talk about, not at all. You know, we keep getting hundreds of phone calls and emails every single week, and texts, and people call the show with questions we've never heard, and there's just so much to talk about when it comes to language.
It will never end. It will never end.
Isn't that great?
It's great. Well, I have to ask you, Can you tell me about a, quote, plain, old, lovely, and uplifting word?
Oh, a plain, yes, I have a whole chapter on plain, old, uplift, what is it, lovely and uplifting words?
Yes, we need some uplifting words these days.
Oh, well, you know, the word that I'm just amazed isn't a part of everyday vocabulary is the word respair. It looks like despair, only it's with an R, and it means recovery from despair. If you look it up in the Oxford English Dictionary, I believe it was in the 17th century that this word was used. But for some reason, it fell out of favor. And I have no idea why, because I find that a really uplifting word. I like words like susurration, which means, the whispering, like the whispering of the breeze in the tree, you know, related to Spanish, of course. Mm-hmm. And I also really like the word stilliform. S-T-I-L-L-I-F-O-R-M, stilliform, which means drop-shaped. And I love the fact that it's related to words like distill, which involves droplets, you know, being distilled, and instill, like you instill something in someone. As a teacher, you instill knowledge and curiosity into students, and that has to do with just dripping it into them. And I think it's just such a beautiful word in and of itself. And if you spell it out, stilliform, it's got all those straight up and down lines in the letters. I mean, I love words that much that I will just luxuriate in a word like that and roll it around on my tongue and just behold it, you know, behold how it looks. So that's an uplifting one. Did you have one from the book that you particularly
I really like respair. I'm really liking right? that. That's the tattoo or something. That's the kind right? of a perfect word for right now.
Yeah.
Martha Barnett, thank you so much. What a thrill to get to talk to you. I'm so happy I got a chance to talk to you today. Thank you.
Oh, what a pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
Martha Barnett is the author of Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. Martha Barnett is a longtime journalist, dynamic public speaker, and co-host of the popular radio show and podcast, Away with Words. She's also the author of A Garden of Words, Ladyfingers and Nun's Tummies, and Dog Days and Dandelions. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Write to us at bookpublic@tpr.org. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.